This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigobine. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
I'm doing good. Also joining us this morning, former Washington Capital, Toronto Maple Leaf, and some stints in some other locations, our good friend Leapin' Lou Franceschetti. Good morning, Lou. How are you?
Morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Just to let our listeners know, middle of the hour, we're going to be speaking with Michael Trakos, acclaimed hockey writer, and bottom end of the hour, former Raptors coach Butch Carter. Naz, every morning, every Sunday morning, we do a recap on the Leafs performance on the week. Man, we got off to a bad one Monday night against the Buffalo Sabres. We had a 2-0 lead, and then the proverbial ceiling caved in. They looked brutal the rest of the game, got outplayed by Buffalo in our own barn. Pretty good performance against Colorado, Stanley Cup champions, defending Stanley Cup champions who are peaking right now. Leafs held them to a draw but lost in overtime. Their best game of the week against the Hurricanes on Friday night, and they got the result last night, but I can't say other than Matt Murray, they looked all that impressive last night. Man, it was middle of the game. It was middle of the second period, and they were being outshot 32-10. And got outchanced throughout the whole game, like 2-1 by Ottawa. But they managed to pull it out, Kerfoot. I think it was the ninth. It was the ninth go round in the shootout after the overtime, and Kerfoot popped it in, and Leafs managed to come up with a result. An up and down week for the Leafs. Are they look like they're heading in the right direction, Ness?
Yeah, they are. They don't play good against weaker teams. That's simple as that. It's all year. It's been the same thing. Buffalo and Ottawa and San Jose and all the rest of them. They play well against the good teams and not so well against the bad teams. And that's the way it's been.
Yeah, that's probably hitting the nail on the head there, Lou. But is that something, playing bad against the bad teams? Is that something that should inspire confidence in us?
Well, you really never know. It's tough to look at the picture here this year with the Leafs, that they do have an abysmal record against the teams that are below them, and then against teams that are above them or at their standard, they seem up to come to play. I guess the only thing that I can look at is maybe they take these teams too easy. I wouldn't take Ottawa easy, because Ottawa is probably, I would say, in the next 3 or 4 years is going to be one of the top teams in the league. And also with the Sabres. But there seems to be a pattern here that they seem to fall. They seem to go ahead by a couple of goals, and then they put their foot off the gas pedal for some reason and let the other teams come back. So I know Matt Murray stood on his head last night. Maybe it was a homecoming for him. Maybe it's going to give him an indication of who's going to be the starting goalie in the first round of the playoffs. I really don't know. But at the end of the day, I think there's certain teams right now that are more or less they're wanting to get this season over with, injury-free, and start the playoffs.
Yeah, certainly Matt Murray was the star of last night's game, even though he gave up 4 goals. I like to use the word disconcerting. I was going to try and use a new word this particular Sunday, but I wasn't happy to see the Leafs coughed up a 4-2 lead in the last 10 minutes of the third period. And in fact, Ottawa scored, Naz, correct me if I'm wrong, They scored Kachuk. Didn't Brady Kachuk score the tying goal with 10 seconds left in the game?
10.1 seconds, yep.
Yeah, and that, you know, but they had, I believe they had a power play at that time. And, you know, some of these, I mean, that was the penalty on TJ Brody that led to the tying goal. Yeah, that one, you know, in today's NHL, I guess that's a penalty. I don't remember if you saw the one just before that. I think was it Justin Hall? You know, just taps the guy, just taps him.
Stick, yeah.
And the guy trips over his shoelaces, and the ref calls that. Sometimes, and I don't like to be critical of referees, but you just tap a guy on the skates, and the guy drops like a sack of potatoes, and you know, and that's a penalty. I mean, come on, Lou, what's going on? Like, can't even touch anybody anymore. Hockey's becoming like soccer. What's going on, Lou?
You know what? I think it's the incompetence of the referees. They've got no clue of what they're going to call or what they're not going to call, because you see certain incidences where it's definitely a penalty and they don't call it, and then there's the penalties that they call that shouldn't even be called. And then once the playoffs start, everything, they put their whistles away. So,
well, you have no idea how they're going to. Yeah, they put their whistles away sometimes. You know, they didn't put their whistles away in the third period against the Leafs in Tampa, you know, in Game 6 last year in Tampa, which, you know, if we want to get into that one where the Leafs had to fight off a 5-on-3, you know, with in the last 10 minutes of a deciding game, which in the old days, those calls wouldn't, especially the second one, would never have been made. So I'm not so sure they put their whistles away anymore, Lou.
Well, again, we're not in the playoffs, so we'll see what happens then. But I'll tell you one thing, Wally. Players, they want to see consistency.
But
what I've seen,
yeah,
is that referees are deciding too many of these games, which is not fair for the players,
yeah,
and it's not really fair for the fans sometimes, because they're watching a good game, and all of a sudden, some referee decides to make a bonehead call, which shouldn't have been, and it could decide the playoff game. And that's what we don't like to see as players, is that the referee makes a call, especially near the end of the game, to decide what the score is going to be.
I'll throw this out. Lou, I'm going to throw this out to Naz, and I want you to come back with it. You know, hockey's always had the reputation of being the best refereed game in professional sports. I mean, you look at some of the calls you see in some of these NFL games. You know, the baseball umpires are under the gun. Look at the battle Van Vliet's had with the NBA referees, cost them $30,000. So the NHL generally has always been considered the best refereed game in all of professional sports. But Naz and then Lou, as professional sports, are the athletes today, they're obviously much better athletes than they were 30, 40 years ago. They're bigger, faster, stronger, with an emphasis on faster. In some ways, has it just become too difficult, or the games are way too quick for the referees to be as good as they used to be? Naz?
I think the four-man system has a lot to do with it. There's two referees out there, and they're trying to make calls that are suited, right? And I don't know if the four-man system is that good for the league, really.
Well, it impairs
the game.
Well, it impairs the consistency, certainly. I mean, one referee is looking at it from one perspective, and the other guy is looking at it from a different perspective. But, Lou, before we go to break, has the difficulty with refereeing in professional sports become that these guys, the athletes, are just too fast? And the referees, it was a lot easier in the old days to make those split-second refereeing decisions. Now, these guys got to make these split-second decisions all game long. Has that got something to do with it, Lou?
You know what? I'm really not sure if it is, because the game's still the same. The referees right now, I think, are incompetent, plain and simple. I just don't. When you have eight eyes on the ice and they don't catch certain calls, it's just unfortunate that. And I know the two linesmen can't make any calls, but at the end of the day, they could have they can put in their two cents.
Oh, they can contribute in certain situations. They're called upon to.
Yeah, if they're right.
The eyes. Yeah.
But hey, I have no qualms with the refereeing that was done 30 or 40 years ago. because they were consistent. And the one thing that I liked is they communicate with the players. There's no communication. There's no verbal talk between the players and referees nowadays. It's what the league wants, and this is what the league is getting.
It's interesting. I can tell you who the referees in the NHL were 20, 30 years ago. You know, all those guys, the Kerry Frasers, and you know, all those guys that Kaharski, and I can't tell you one of these guys nowadays. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't give you one name of one referee in the NHL today. But maybe that's my fault rather than theirs. On that note, we're going to go to break. We're going to bring back and continue NHL and Leafs discussion with whom I consider one of Canada's great hockey writers, Michael Tracos. We'll be right back.
No hard crosses. No.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville decided to do what it could to stop world prices from spiralling out of control. With a large pickup special, get a large one-topping pizza for only $11.99. $11.99 for a large pizza?
No, Leafs Pizzaville. No.
Call Pizzaville for the large pickup special at 736-3636.
Rayo's got big nose!
Or online at pizzaville.ca.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
We all value our sporting heroes. But what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
They never argue sports. They just explain while they're always correct. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 in downtown Toronto, 96.7 FM, and live video and audio streaming, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, Michael Tracos. Michael's the author. The next one's How McDavid, Matthews, and a Group of Young Guns Took Over the NHL. He's also a former national hockey writer with Post Media, contemplating his next move. He's got a podcast coming out later this week, which I'm looking forward to, and a lot of hockey fans and hockey nations are looking forward to. It's called The Hockeyverse. Michael, welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour.
Hey, thanks, guys. What's going on?
Well, we're going to ask you that. That's what you're here for, Michael. We always appreciate your insights. I've always considered you one of Canada's great hockey writers. And we're going to cut to the chase right away, Michael. Everybody's either excited or concerned about the Toronto Maple Leafs. I will ask you, should we be excited or should we be concerned?
Yeah, I think excitement is the one I would go with. And I get the concern. I get the trepidation. Whenever you go out in the first round, for how many years the Leafs have, and you're staring down what looks like it's going to be a first-round opponent against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who've been in the final each of the last 3 years and have won the Cup in two of those times. Yeah, there is going to be concern that, you know, Kyle Dubas didn't do enough at the trade deadline, which I think he did enough. And there's going to be concern that even though he did enough, that it's still the Tampa Bay Lightning and it's still Andrei Vasilevsky. It's Kucherov, Stamkos, Point, Hedman, all the usual suspects on that other end that you're going to have to get past. So, yeah, there's got to be concern because, you know, this is arguably the hardest road to win a Stanley Cup, and it goes through the East. It goes through the Atlantic Division, and even if you get past the Atlantic and you get past Tampa, you got to pass, you know, Boston probably, and then very likely facing either Carolina or the New York Rangers or the Devils in the conference final. So, yeah, the Leafs haven't done themselves any favors, but, you know, if you're going to be the best, you got to beat the best, right? And we'll see how it all shakes down. But, you know, when you look at the Leafs right now, 93 points after 69 games, had a tough one against the Ottawa Senators last night. I still think this team is arguably the best Leafs team that we've seen in a number of years.
Inez?
Michael, who starts, Samsonov or Murray in the playoffs?
Is there an option three there, guys?
Yeah, just Joseph Wall. Yeah.
Wall, yeah.
How about James Reimer? He might be available now. That's the real problem. And, you know, Achilles heel. And goaltending has done him in. And, you know, when's the last time this team had a goalie that you could say, you know what, put him in net, we're going to win a series with this guy? You got to go back to what, Ed Belfour?
Yeah.
Maybe before that, Cujo?
Yeah.
Felix Potvin, I guess Lou would have a good idea as to...
Don't bring up Bester, okay?
Yeah, but really, it's. I'm not saying like it hasn't been a great year for Samsonov and even Murray last night. A couple shaky goals, but he faced, what, 40-plus shots?
50-plus shots.
Was it 50? Oh, geez.
Counting the overtime, yeah.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But, you know, you're in a division with Vasilevsky. And you know what Boston's two-headed monster goaltending duo has done there? And Shesterkin's in New York. There's some pretty big goaltenders in the East. And, you know, if I'm going to rank them and rank where Toronto is, yeah, I don't feel confident with Samsonov or Murray winning a round against these guys. So, you know, the Toronto's going to have to, you know, once again, outscore some of their defensive problems. And I like the defense right now. I just don't think that they're quite where they need to be in terms of finding that perfect fit amongst the six guys. But there's still time. And, yeah, I don't think if you're a Leaf fan, you can expect that Samsonov's going to steal a series. But yeah, right now, if he's healthy, I like Samsonov as my number one. That being said, the Leafs are going to go far. You're going to see Samsonov. You're going to see Murray. Heck, you might even see wallets on that at some time.
Lou?
Mike, who does the LA Kings have, or how are they doing it with what they have? The only two names that I know out there is Kopitar and Doughty, and even Doughty's been hurt for most of the years. How are they keeping up? And they're, from what I'm reading and hearing everywhere, they could be a favorite to come out of that West.
Yeah, how bad is the Pacific Division, guys? And I'm not saying that the LA Kings are a terrible team because, you know, they got 90 points in 70 games right now. They're top dogs along with Vegas, and they've got a better record than Edmonton. But if you're going to rank the divisions in the NHL, I think the Pacific is probably – I would even put them behind the Central, and that's saying a lot because the Central's been just – you know, the dog's breakfast this year. As for how they're doing it, you mentioned Doughty, Kopitar. These guys have, what, combined, they've won four cups between the two of them. A lot of experience there. Kopitar's not even having a good year. Doughty, I don't think would he be on Team Canada if the Olympics or the World Cup were being staged in a month? Maybe not. He's also past his prime. They've got a lot of kids, though, that have come up. Kevin Fiala is having a great year. He's not a kid anymore, but you put him, you put Adrian Kempe, Victor Arvidsson, a guy I know really well. Gabriel Vilardi is doing well. He's got 20 goals this year. They've got more, I think, guys with 10 goals than, you know, half the league right now. So they are getting kind of balanced scoring, but you know, experience is, you know, key there. Experience and the fact that they're playing in a Pacific Division where you can beat up on the Coyotes on a nightly basis. You can beat up on the Canucks. He can beat up on a lot of teams that are just sort of right at the bottom of the league. A lot of those other California teams are just complete garbage this year. So I think that probably has something to do with it as well.
We're talking to acclaimed hockey writer Michael Tracos. Michael, I've probably asked this question 3 weeks in a row, and I'm going to ask it again. How are the Bruins doing this? They're having, you know, their stats-wise, they're looking like the 1976 Montreal Canadiens. we all know Pasternak, we all know Bergeron, you know, we all know the little guy there, what's his name, Marchand. You know, got the great defense, McAvoy on defense, getting some good goaltending. But I got to think, you know what? Are they overrated? Are they vulnerable? Everybody seems to be saying, oh yeah, it's going to be Boston and Colorado in the Stanley Cup. Where are the Bruins vulnerable?
I don't think they are. You know, when you look at Boston, it just seems like whatever player they get in there, they just know that you're going to be playing a Bruins style of game, and it comes down right from the top. Like, before he left, Zdeno Chara, you know, laid down a foundation of how the Boston Bruins are going to be playing, and he left and, you know, he passed on that torch to Bergeron, and it comes right down to the fact that Bergeron might be one of the most underpaid players in the NHL. And, you know, everyone comes in there, whether it's a Taylor Hall, whether it's a Hampus Lindholm, whoever, you fall in line. There's a Bruin way. And just like L.A., the Bruins have had success. They're always in the mix come playoff time. I thought when they said goodbye to Bruce Cassidy, I said to myself, and I actually wrote this, that, you know, that this is the first sign that I think the Bruins are not going to be, you know, undergoing a rebuild, but with how many older guys they have on that roster, don't be surprised if this is sort of a one-year retool where they get a high draft pick and go about their business next year. I was dead wrong. Maybe Bruce Cassidy was sucking some of the life out of those guys because Jim Montgomery came in and it's been night and day right from the start where the Bruins weren't losing at home, weren't losing in regulation. Even now, you look at how many losses they have in regulation, and it's almost like, is this a typo? They're just on fire all year. So I don't know if there are any weak spots. If anything, at the deadline, it seemed like they beefed up a lot of positions where, you know, it was very much arms race at the trade deadline, and I thought the Bruins, the Leafs, and the Lightning did fantastic, and, you know, I don't envy the team that has to play them in the first round. And if it's the Leafs facing them in the second round, it's going to be a juggernaut.
Yeah, well, hopefully it is the Leafs facing them in the second round. I can't see the Bruins being knocked off in the first round. But it wouldn't be the first time the number one overall got knocked off by the eighth seed in the conference. It's not an unusual event. Naz?
How are the Penguins done like dinner now?
Why do you say that?
They're just getting killed out there. 6-0 loss to the Rangers yesterday.
And, you know what? That wild card, that final wild card spot, the final two. The Islanders are just, 2 points ahead of the Penguins, and they played two more games. So, you know, they're not locked in. And I really think that, you know, Buffalo is still going to make a late push, and I think the Florida Panthers are going to find their way in the playoffs. But when was the last time you guys ever bet against Sidney Crosby?
A long time ago.
And how much money did you lose when you did?
Probably, yeah.
That's really what it comes down to. When you got number 87 on your roster, and, you know, if Malkin's healthy and he's playing, you know, whenever he is healthy, he's playing great hockey. Those two guys are going to cover, are going to carry a lot of the mail for you. So, you know, goaltending is going to tell the story, but I would never bet against Sid. You know, since Malkin's been in the league, the Penguins have never missed the playoffs. So, and that's with the injuries, that's with the concussions that Sid dealt with, that's with the knee injuries, and, you know, the many different aches and pains that Malkin has had throughout his career. So, you know, similar to the Detroit Red Wings for all those years, where they're just constantly going into the playoffs. You know, You know, the Penguins might not make any noise. They might be a one and done this year where, you know, they face the Bruins in the first round and just go out. But I'd be surprised if the Penguins don't make it. I think as long as you got Sidney Crosby and you've got Malkin on that roster, you know, you can almost pencil them in year after year after year.
Lou?
I just want to make a comment there, Mike, to your Boston Bruins thing. Anytime you get traded to the Boston Bruins, it's more or less you put on that Boston Bruin uniform and you know exactly what to expect. You go back to the Boston Garden where everybody came to work with lunch pails. And it not necessarily starts with Bergeron and the crew that they have right now. I think it starts with Cam Neely and Don Sweeney. Those are two iconic Bruin players. And any player that comes into that organization, they know exactly how they have to perform or they're not going to last too long. And it showed when they traded Tyler Seguin out of there when he won more or less. He was a different style of player that the Bruins were looking for. They put him on the right side, and then they dealt him a few years later. When you get traded to the Boston Bruins, or when you sign with the Bruins, just like Foligno did over the Toronto Maple Leafs, they expect the work ethic, and they expect the lunch pail to be brought every single day to work. And I think that's how they're winning their games right now. They just seem to outwork their teams and just wait for that magical moment where the other team makes a mistake and they capitalize on it. But going back to this era right now, are the Edmonton Oilers for real, or is goaltending going to be a problem for them also?
I like Edmonton. I think if I'm going to pick a team from the West to go to the final, Lou, I'm picking the Oilers right now. I love what they did at the deadline. Everyone kind of craps on Ken Holland last couple years for not getting a goalie, not doing this, not being able to, you know, surround two of the best players in the league with enough kind of secondary scoring or talent, whatever. This guy getting Matthias Ekholm at the deadline from the Nashville Predators, I thought was probably the best pickup of any team. So the goaltending, yeah, it's going to be a problem. But I like Stuart Skinner. I think Jack Campbell has had just an awful year for whatever reason. It just hasn't been working out for him. But that doesn't mean that he can't just, you know, get hot in a couple weeks and you know, just be good. Like, you don't have to be great if you're playing behind Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Zach Hyman and Evander Kane and all the guys they have up there. You just have to be good. Just allow no more than three goals and let the other guys take over. And we were talking about the Leafs earlier and how difficult of a road it's going to be for them to get in the final. Well, Edmonton is the opposite. Who do they have to get past? Is Colorado basically their biggest obstacle to get to the final? Maybe. So if I'm looking at pathways to the final, I love, you know, Edmonton, it seems like they can just go into kind of cruise control. As long as they get past L.A. or Vegas in the first round, I think it's going to be easy peasy for them. And I could see them winning the Campus Cup this year. If I'm going to rank Canadian teams and likelihood of them winning, I'm actually putting Edmonton ahead of Toronto just because Edmonton plays in the West and Toronto plays in the toughest division and the toughest conference right now in the NHL.
Yeah, whatever team comes out of the East, they're going to be pretty spent.
They might have ice packs on each knee, arms in slings. You know, it's a war of attrition. You guys know this, right? So, yeah, if you can make it easy on yourself and get into that final where you're basically been playing pond hockey for three rounds, then you've got a leg up on the other team.
Michael, we've we're a few weeks into the Leaf additions at the trade deadline, all six of them. Let's get your thoughts on Dubas's move at the trade deadline. O'Reilly, had a great game against Buffalo, but he got injured, but he'll be back. And let's go through them. Evaluate, now that we've had the benefit of a little bit of hindsight a few weeks into it, your evaluation of Kyle's moves at the trade deadline.
Well, you know what is funny is, like, for years, Kyle Dubas has been kind of with that reputation of, you know, this guy's all analytics, he's the mad mathematician. And then this year comes around and he grabs his calculator, he throws it into Lake Ontario, and he says, fine, who do you guys want? You want toughness? Okay, I'm going to get you Luke Shen and Jake McCabe. All right, you want some leadership? All right, fine, we'll get you Ryan O'Reilly. And he just kind of went down that list, and it just seemed like he answered every sort of Leaf fans' wishes, or finally listened to all what everyone was kind of screaming at him. So you really can't fault Dubas for, you know, the philosophical change that occurred this year, because these are playoff players. I've been saying that they should get Luke Shen for basically since the start of the season. I thought he'd be perfect for them. And McCabe is cut from the same cloth. Ryan O'Reilly just gives him more depth down the middle, another option. He will be healthy for the playoffs. So, you know, that injury, while you're kind of going, no, not again, this is another Nick Foligno situation. Well, at least it happened now and not, you know, like a month from now when that could really have hurt them. So the only question I have is, did he add a little too much? And when you bring in this many guys, and Luke could probably speak to this better than I can, it really does affect the dressing room. And, you know, that Leaf room is probably tighter than a lot of us really realize or have really written about, because, you know, right before the deadline, they were all at that Bruce Springsteen concert in Seattle. I had a lot of people sending me pictures of them arm in arm, and Sandin was there, Engvall was there, and it just seemed like this was a team of brothers more than just kind of a bunch of friends. And, you know, that can affect things. When you lose that many pieces, and when you're adding that many pieces, are they all going to gel in time? Does everyone really recognize the role? Similar to what Lou was saying with the Bruins and how everyone understands, hey, you're in this environment, you know, fall in line. I don't know if Toronto has that same sort of cachet yet. So that's going to be the only thing. And right now, the defense, Sheldon's got to find his six, stick with that six, and let them gel, because right now it's kind of two guys in, two guys out, and you don't really know what you're going to get on a nightly basis.
We've been talking to Michael Tracos. Michael, we could carry on this conversation for a lot longer than this, and as McCowan says, time is our enemy. So we're going to have to let you go, but before we let you go, you've got a podcast coming out later this week. Why don't you tell our listeners all about it?
Yeah, it's called The Hockeyverse, and, you know, being in Toronto, we're kind of the center of the Hockeyverse here, so that's where we got the name, and it's going to be a lot of call-ins. We're going to take a lot of kind of fans' questions. I have 20 years in the business of covering the Leafs and the NHL, so I'm going to take you into the dressing room and kind of give you the perspective of a guy who covers the Leafs on a daily basis. So it's going to be a lot of fun. The first episode should be either dropping later this week or early next week, and appreciate the time. Appreciate you guys promoting it, and I think we're going to have a lot to chew on with this year's playoffs coming around the corner.
Michael, not only are we going to promote it, we're going to listen to it, and I may be one of your first callers. We may have to debate
something great
on your show. Anyways, thanks. You know how much we appreciate you joining us, and hopefully best of luck on your new podcast, and I highly encourage all our listeners to listen in, one of the bright hockey minds in the country. Michael, thanks so much for joining us.
All right, thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the weekend.
We will. Michael Tracos. Gentlemen, we're going to take it to break, and we're going to have a little basketball talk. We'll come back with Butch Carter. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville asked, do you want to meet the hot Hawaiian of your dreams? This hot Hawaiian is slathered in bacon, red onion, spicy sausage, pineapple, and hot banana peppers. A large thin crust is just $16.99. One bite and you'll say, "Lew, wow!" You might even get a lay on the beach. Call Pizzaville at #3636 on your cell phone.
We all value our sporting heroes, but what price would you put on one in mint condition? If you ask us, you'll get an honest answer. Mint Inc., trading cards and sports merchandise, is looking to buy your vintage collection of hockey, basketball, baseball, football, and soccer heroes. Come and see us in person at our new Toronto Mint Inc. Gallery at 198 Davenport, east of Avenue Road, or visit our store online at mintink.ca. Show us what you got, and we'll show you the money. Think Mint Inc.
Passion. It drives athletes, entrepreneurs, family businesses, and fast-growing companies. It's also what inspires KPMG Enterprise to help drive success. A dedicated audit, tax, law, and advisory practice, KPMG Enterprise delivers ideas and insights. Whether you want to grow your business, embrace technology, plan for an exit, or manage the transition of wealth, search KPMG Enterprise, understanding what it takes to make your business even better.
There are lawyers at Miller Thompson who know your industry. They'd like to introduce you to theirs. It starts with relationships. It's not just about happy clients. They support thriving business partners. Miller Thompson infuses law with the same tenacity you bring to your work, whether supporting your daily operations or offering urgent legal advice. But that's enough about them. Let's talk about you. Visit MillerThompson.com and find out how they can move your business forward.
They're not here to be nice. They're here to be right. The boys are back. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We are live on AM 740 and we're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour former Raptors coach Butch Carter. Butch, how are you this morning?
Good. Good. How's the trio doing this morning?
The trio's doing good. Thanks. And we consider you the fourth horseman on this panel, Butch. So thanks for joining us. And March Madness is upon us. One of the great sporting events of the year, and of course, what could possibly happen in March Madness, Butch, other than upsets? And we had one, second time only, and since we've gone to a 64 teams, second time only that a first seed got upset by a 16 seed. And this one didn't go over very well because we had a local interest, Fairleigh Dickinson University, I hope I got that right, beat Purdue, the number one seed in that group. Purdue had the Canadian kid in there, Zach Edey. We were hoping we were going to get a better look at him through the whole thing. We were hoping that at least Purdue was going to make it to the Final Four, but upsets are what sports are all about. Butch, what happened?
Well, Purdue did not have very athletic perimeter players, and Fairleigh Dickinson he basically scrambled the game like a good high school coach would, that, you know, knows that he doesn't have a good enough team. So he basically put pressure on their Purdue's guards. They weren't able to handle it. They missed shots. He did not double team Zach Edey. And they kept it close enough that, you know, in the tournament, the worst thing that happens to you is another team gets momentum. And we've just seen consistently as these teams get momentum, they can be very destructive and stay in and win a game, and especially a 50-point college game. But Purdue did not have the athletic ability that they've had before on the perimeter. And the teams, when they got beat during the season, it was all from the same recipe. Pressure the point guards. Don't let them walk around and have easy shots. Feel bad for Zach, but I would hope he'll go back for another year. The Purdue fan base can put the money together in NIL and keep him. He's got a problem on the professional side because nobody in the NBA is playing 120, 130-point game. We're seeing it every night. And nobody on an NBA wants to coach a big. I don't believe if Kareem Abdul-Jabbar came out in the draft, someone would have an excuse where he can't make a three. So there is less and less skill coaching at the professional level of the NBA, and they'll use that as an excuse. But Zach Edey is worth drafting just for his IQ. The other player last year that got hurt in the draft was named Kessler. He got drafted and traded to Utah. He was the best big, I thought, defensively. But the biggest problem is if you have a great post player, you have to be able to shoot the basketball. If you'd have taken the Princeton shooters and put them around Zach, they never would have had that problem. But undersized, non-athletic perimeter players at Purdue, every time they run into athletes, they've had a problem.
Naz, I'll turn it over to you.
But why all the upsets now? And from years gone by, there was very few upsets. Now there's so many.
Well, you've got the issue that you have a lot of older players playing on on teams that, you know, wouldn't have won. One of my guys is an assistant at Memphis State, and they're playing FAU. And, shoot, they got older guys from all over the place. So, and you're looking at, you know, who was playing the last game. I think it was Oklahoma, Kansas. One guy had been to three schools. So you've got older guys that are moving into these mid-majors, not a bunch on the high-major side. Well, Penn State had four, right, to have the year that they have, but Shrewsbury is coaching for a contract. And he's got no NIL money at Penn State. So I don't care how much money Penn State offers him. If he has no NIL money, he's just going to be hard to compete with Michigan State. Michigan, Northwestern's got a very good collective. You know, that's the difference is these older players are – now you have a better third guy, better fourth guy than you ever had. And it's a problem for, you know, Tennessee just bullied Duke. I mean, it was ridiculous. They just bullied them. So, but I think, you know, Duke's playing with the guys they recruited and signed, younger team, and but they got physically manhandled.
Lou?
Butch, of the teams that are, or the schools that are left, who do you think is going to more or less win this thing? And which player will make a name for himself in the next couple of weeks?
The two most talented teams, I believe, are Alabama and Houston. Alabama definitely has the best wing player in college sports playing all year, the kid that got in trouble around the gun incident. And Houston is just good. Kelvin Sampson gets those guys to play hard. They move the ball. But Sasser, if Sasser, the guard, is available, then I would expect Houston to be very good. I would not sleep on UCLA, but they lost their best point guard. But I thought that the two best conferences at the top were – for basketball were the SEC and the Big 12. So the Big 12, you got Kansas State still in. Kansas went out because they got beat by an SEC team, very physical team with Arkansas. But I say at the end, Alabama's going to be there, and I would think that the team that we saw, Houston, the way they beat up on Auburn last night, will be there.
It's not bad enough the SEC's taking over college football. Now they're taking over college basketball. So I got to listen to Lou and Naz harp about Alabama on the basketball side too, Butch?
Yeah, but they don't – as well as they've done in athletics, they don't have the best TV contract. The Big Ten's got that.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, well let's keep that going. I got to deal with these guys all fall. I don't want to deal with them into the spring as well. I got to start listening.
No. You know what? I'm a UCLA guy in basketball,
yeah,
Wally.
Yeah, I'm a Bruins guy too. From way from the back from the All Cinder Bill Walton days. And on that note, Butch. You know, us old timers, we look back fondly on incredible, and I'm sure you do, at your time at Indiana. You know, the incredible matchups from the old days, for lack of a better term, the UCLA Bruins and the year they got beat by David Thompson and NC State, and then Indiana in the undefeated season in 76, and all those days is college? It doesn't seem like college basketball has the star power that it used to. But you wouldn't know it from the amount of money they're making nowadays, Butch.
No, you wouldn't. I mean, I was reminiscing. I was walking down the hall, and they mentioned on the TV that Furman hadn't been in the tournament since for 40 years. And I started laughing because we beat Furman. When they were last in the tournament in 1980, we beat them to advance to Lexington. So, you know, it's special. You know, Woodson, my teammate, is a head coach in Indiana. And I've watched more Indiana games these last 2 years than I've watched in the previous 25 years. So we'll see how they play tonight, and if they can advance, they've got the talent too. But clearly, some of these physical teams, the Tennessee, the Arkansas, Houston, they're a problem for these teams. They're older, they're softer. But I've really enjoyed the tournament. I grew up, I wanted to go to UCLA, but it was too far away from home. I was a big UCLA fan, Larry Farmer and the Lob. It was just, you know, Coach, he really had it going. And from a drill perspective, I use a lot of his drills, especially the one around the bank shot.
Yeah.
But I'm loving what's going on. I hope you guys are enjoying it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's always a special time of year. Let's turn it over. Let's turn it a little bit closer to home, Butch. The Raptors won last night, third straight. They're in a playoff play-in spot now, from what I can tell.
Right.
Right now, I think if the season ended today, I think they'd be lining up against Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. So what, you know, Siakam last night, double-double, Van Vliet, 28. It's $30,000 he's got to make up for. Poeltl, is this Raptors team on? They get the Bucks tonight, but are you seeing any positive signs about this Raptors team? Could I know they're not in the discussion of NBA champions, but could they go on a little run in the playoffs, Butch?
I think it's hard for them because they've not been consistent on being able to stop people from scoring. And, you know, I don't know if you guys remember, but the last time Atlanta came into the building here in Toronto, they made every shot they wanted to make and destroyed the Raptors. The Raptors, if they've got energy, they've got talent. But, you know, the reality that I see is that as good as an athlete as Scotty Barnes is, he is not an NBA top-level scorer. So, you know, they're really at a deficit if you're going to play a 125-point game that one of the guys is going to play 35 minutes for you is a low output on from offensive scoring. So, you know, if I said to you, you know, take a piece of paper and tell me what Scotty Barnes does offensively, it'd be pretty hard for anyone to draw that picture. We know he uses his left hand, but I don't know. You know, and if Fred VanVleet's not healthy, nothing's going to happen. Fred is the general, and he's hugely skilled. And I watched a small play last night where he drove down the lane, and the defender didn't know what in the hell he was going to do, and Fred shot it with his left hand. He's just really good when he's healthy, and I don't think they can do anything without Fred.
Nez?
What is the Raptors' biggest need, Butch?
They need more effective scoring, but it's got to be a 3-and-D guy. In other words, a wing player that can play and score, defend and score. So, Naz, the history is basically my goals. If I'm going to go in and turn a program around, the first thing I have to do is lower the defensive field goal percentage of the opponent. You have to do it, because if you don't do it, you'll never get any respect from the officials. And so that's the juggernaut that they have to come up with. How do we get teams to shoot a lower field goal percentage? All right, the direct consequence of that is that now you've got more rebounds and more chances on the offensive end. But if historically no one has been able to win an NBA championship that wasn't in the top 10 on defensive field goal percentage except Dallas, and they were 11, I think. So the reality at any level, if you're going to beat good teams, you've got to lower their defensive field goal percentage. And with you combine that with the fact that coach has played those guys a ton of minutes, I don't know if it's capable, especially in a play-in game where it's life or death. But it all starts with, for me, with lower the defense field goal percentage and let your leaders lead. And Fred needs to be healthy.
Lou?
Butch, what's happening with Jay Morant? Is there something going on there? In the last 3 months and even before that, I've heard problems. One altercation between Sherling Starp and his dad.
It's all bad.
In the middle of it.
Yeah, it's all bad.
His entourage that he has, being videoed with a gun in his hand, and being, most of all, being in the middle of all this, what I call crap that's going on with professional athletes and their entourages nowadays, looking for trouble and carrying weapons.
Lou, it's all bad. You know, I mean, you know, you're seeing it. It's all bad. And normally what we don't know means it's worse. And this behavior of giving any 21-year-old $90 million is always going to be a problem. And he's a public figure that they were able to hide it because they were in Memphis for a while. But I imagine there'll be more stuff that comes out. I mean, I love young Morant. I met him and his uncle and his dad in Chicago. He's a huge talent, but he's really got off the court issues with being who he is. Like, for these guys who come from nothing or little or nothing, and you give them that kind of money, they struggle with what kind of person, what kind of adults do I want to be around? And it's a maturity issue. It's a total maturity issue. And he has to grab hold of it like he has basketball and say, I can't do these things. I don't think he's a bad person, but he's definitely done some stupid stuff.
Yeah, but now, but you're seeing it at the college level too now with Brandon Miller with Alabama. He supplies a gun for murder. Like, do these guys just not get it?
Clearly they don't get it, man. Clearly they don't get it. Like, what are you doing with a gun? Well, New Mexico State, they stopped the whole program.
Yeah, but I mean, not to defend the basketball players. That I'm not going to defend anybody who gets into these situations, but they're obviously emblematic of everything else that goes on in society. They being professional athletes and $90 million, yes, of course, they're held to a higher standard. They're in the public view. But, you know, there's a lot of that going on in society, Butch. And, you know, I was about to say rightly or wrongly. Let me take the rightly out of it and just wrongly. And they're a microcosm of that, aren't they?
Well, they've grown up in it where, remember, you know, all my boys who were the oldest one now is 40. They all grew up with a video with some kind of gun game. And I think it's just transcended to, you know, shooting people fakely. Someone has a mental health issue, and all of a sudden, that's why we're having all these mass shootings. It didn't start until sometime after they start playing all these video games. And now they're carrying that mental health thing into schools. I mean, innocent people and kids are being damaged to, right?
Yeah.
So, look, but as far as what we cover sports, any athlete carrying a gun, feels he has to carry a gun, is a dumbass. And we know that.
Yep.
All right? They are. And they shouldn't be. And the people around them should have told they were carrying a gun. All right? But it is what it is, guys. And it's when it comes out publicly, it's ugly. But the sad part is that they could have nipped that. To tell me that everyone in the Memphis organization didn't know he was carrying a gun, you know? So if they won't hold him to a higher standard, he can't deliver to a higher standard.
Yeah, absolutely. Butch, we only have about a minute left. We'd be remiss if we didn't ask you in a minute or less. The NBA is headed in the stretch run to the playoffs. If you were to pick a couple of teams coming out of the East and a couple of teams coming out of the West, from what you see at the present time, who would you put money on?
On the West, I'd put money on Memphis and, believe it or not, Sacramento.
Wow. Okay.
And in the East, Boston, of course, and Philly.
And not Milwaukee.
Well, I mean, the issue at the end of the day is they have to defend. And I don't know. I think those other two teams are on a mission to get one. Giannis has already got one in his pocket.
Yep.
But I think those other two are going to chase it very hard. Their window's closing.
On that note, Butch, the producer's giving me that funny look. I'm already 2 minutes over time, and I'm going to have to pay the price for this transgression. Butch, you know how much we appreciate you coming on. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, guys. Take care.
Butch Carter, Lou, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Naz, as always, I give you the quick last word.
Spring is here. The golf season is
here. The golf season, yeah.
See you, Wally.
Yeah, good point, Naz, and hopefully we'll be on the green stuff very, very soon. To all our loyal listeners, thank you very much. Naz, next week we celebrate our 9th anniversary at Zoomer Radio. Looking forward to that. To everyone, have a fantastic and safe week.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.